Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, more and more people are paying their bills with digital wallets. Are you one of them? We'll be talking about how these payment methods work and how to set them up with our regular guest, Peter Green, today. Pete's a computer consultant with Infostar.com. He comes by every other month to help you with your tech-related problems. Besides digital payments, we'll talk about new services from Apple and take your tech-related questions as well. So I hope you'll join the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Peter Green, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Good to have you with us. Well, digital payments. How do you define a digital payment?
It's in digital form, it's zeros and ones encrypted so that it's identified only to you, that the whole process is to encrypt it and tokenize it. So it's just you, and to make it easy for you. So if you've already identified yourself owning a smartphone, and a lot of the devices now use fingerprints, and what we're seeing at airports with customs is facial recognition software, and that's becoming more and more part of everyday life in a variety of ways. But it's really to personalize that purchase, that power to purchase.
Yeah,
and tokenize it and digitalize it so that it's safe. You know, carrying a card around. You know, I was just thinking about that driving in, that making a purchase, and we've heard this a lot of times in the news where people put devices on credit card ATMs and gas stations and gather the number, you know, and the authorization of purchase. That it's probably safer eventually, I would like to see them use that at gas stations so that you could simply, you know, tap your phone, your smartphone, whether it's an Apple or an Android, Google device, and make that purchase because it's tokenized and personalized for you and, you know, that's as far as it goes.
Makes some sense. So there are options out there using digital pay.
Yeah, there's for Apple. Apple has Apple Pay. They also announced that they're coming out with an Apple Card, I believe, sometime late summer, fall. There's also Google Pay, and there's also Samsung Pay. So the Samsung devices can also be Google devices, but you know you can have all you can if you own an Apple device, you can have Apple Pay. If you like an iPad, an iPhone, a watch, you could use your watch. So if you're out there running or biking and you don't want to carry your wallet with you, but you want to be able to make a purchase, more and more places are accepting it. You can use your watch. Fitbits have them. So a lot of the convenience devices, the fitness devices are incorporating payment systems as well. Just to make it convenient and safe.
You know, it seems to me, I want to talk with you about how they work. You know, you think about the fact that there has to be signals going through the air, being transmitted somehow, so that some smart person's going to figure out how to intercept those signals.
Yeah, we got a lot of smart people out there. haven't heard it yet, but... you know, right now...
That's basically how it works, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you're supposed to, you know, tap your phone to the device, the ones that have magnetic card readers. I believe, I'm not sure which one, one of them has a problem with doing that. And that's especially the problem why you can't use it, you know, at gas stations.
Interesting.
The syncing up with their card readers is not ready yet. But so they'll be replaced over time, just like everything.
So for the moment, they're safe. You feel they're safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you do is you sign up for an account, and then you add your cards, your bank account to it, and everything becomes tokenized. So they're not saving in your account. It's the tokenization of your identity and the validation of your association with those cards and who you are. So to replicate it, boy, there'd have to be a really smart person to figure out how to replicate all that, along with your fingerprint.
Yeah, along
and
with
some of you using retina identification as well.
Yeah, that would be pretty tough to.
So, I mean, we see in movies where, you know, they cut somebody's finger off or they take an eye out, but I don't think we're going to be seeing that.
So
I hope not.
Let's say I've got an Apple phone. How hard is it for me to set that up?
Very, very easy. Basically, you have an Apple account, so it's something that you're just adding to it. It's a feature that you're adding to it.
And does it cost me anything?
Nope.
All right.
And also, it's the convenience of something I just started using recently, another payment system, Zella Pay, where you can transfer money between two different banks. You can use PayPal to transfer money between family and friends. So there are all these different ways to do that. And, you know, once you test it and once it's set up in your system, it's ready for you to use whenever you need to.
And Apple made some major announcements, did it not last?
Well, they announced
the card.
They announced the card, and they announced Apple Arcade. So they're competing with Amazon's Twitch. Google announced another gamer platform. There've been online gaming for I remember since my kids got addicted to that stuff. Prince Harry got involved with, you know, and the addiction or the ramifications of some of these games, and I'm like, wow, I experienced that 20 years ago.
I should mention right now, because we're talking about computers today. Tomorrow on the program, I've got the author of kind of like the definitive history of IBM. Mm. Very fascinating book about the whole electronics and the whole software, development of it is really, really interesting.
Well, it was a contract that they won to count to be the census company.
Yeah.
To count.
Yeah.
That's how they started.
That's how they started.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Well, that's something for tomorrow. Right now, we're talking with Peter Green.
So there's a news and News Plus service that Apple announced, and that's really, you know, the benefit is for the people that have the Apple devices that they can subscribe to an enhanced version called News Plus, and, you know, it's really tied into what their devices offer in terms of display and, just taking advantage of the Apple environment. The online content with, Apple TV, that they're enhancing, you know, they're trying to keep up and compete with Amazon Prime, Netflix, and, you know, there are a bunch of others out there. As part of the top 10 list, I listed Apple along with all the different announcements they made and all the other competitors that are out there that are doing their thing. Google announced, their gaming platform and also a way for developers to, you know, get their stuff out there.
Yeah.
So they've made some pretty big announcements as well.
Well, let's take some calls. We can go back to this as we move along today. And you may have some questions about all the information and news surrounding digital payments and the announcements by Apple and others. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Will in West Milwaukee has something for you, so let's go there. Hi, Will.
Hi. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I'm calling in regards to a Chromebook, and I got one over the holidays, and I am scared as hell to use it for financial matters. Everybody tells me, well, you don't need to do anything extra with the Chromebook. Everything's fine. And when everybody says everything's fine, I start worrying. So yeah. I would like to find out what extra steps I should take or need to take. For example, I've heard about VPNs, and I've heard that you need antivirus. Do I need those things? And what direction would you suggest I take for the paranoid?
Yeah.
Well, the antivirus I would suggest, recommend to have on your system. You know, you never know when you get an email from a friend that looks like it's from a friend, but it's really something trying to send you to a site to hijack you. And as long as you keep your antivirus up to date, those things will protect you from having problems like that. You know, as far as using, you know, the Chromebook or PC or tablet, you know, for online banking, you know, I've banked at probably two or three different banks online, and they have different means to protect your, you know, your online presence. If you go to do something, you know, you set up your online account and you go to make a change, they, you know, want to authenticate from you, and it's typically using your cell phone, and you can use it as a text message, where they'll send you a code that you need to go back and plug in on the website to validate, you know, that it's really you making that change. So they have safeguards in place, you know, to allow you to work with your profile and do transactions and feel safe about it. And I've been using, boy, I'm trying to think, how long have I been using it? 2019. I don't know. How long has UW Credit Union been offering online?
A long,
15 years, maybe?
At least, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember being editor for eBill magazine, which was to promote all that, and that was in 1999, 2000. And then a lot of banks started, there was CheckFree had been out there for even way before that for doing, you know, writing checks, you know, paper checks through a CheckFree facility or digitally paying it electronically. So I'm thinking probably at least 15 plus years. Yeah. And, you know, doing the day trading stuff, that's been going on for probably a couple of decades. So,
and now I have, at least in one of my authentications, I put in my password and so forth, and then they send me a message on my, they text me a message, and then I have to press that message on my phone, and then give them authorization to go in. So it's a double.
Yeah. So there's a lot of safeguards out there, you know, to make you feel comfortable with using the technology. And it makes it easier for them. And they also have people 24/7, you know, to support their system. So if you have problems, you know, you can always talk to a person to help you work through something.
Will, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer today and your software, we're talking digital payment methods with our guest, Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. A question for Pete. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Miranda in Madison emailed with a comment about smart pay at gas stations.
Yeah, I think this is great.
She says mobile already offers this through their Speed Pass app. You select the pump from your phone and you pay with Apple Pay. Very slick and secure, and saves you a little time at the pump, plus it stores your receipts for reference.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just they're all jumping on the bandwagon to make it easier to for allow you to pay, collect money, have receipts. How many times if you're using a debit or credit card and you go pay at the gas station, and it's, do you really want that receipt?
Yeah.
You know, it's just another step to say no.
Right.
But if you're a business person and you need it, you know, you're still going to have a record of it. So it's all about convenience, making things easier, faster.
On the other hand, I still like the miles I get from my credit card. So I like paying by credit card and then getting the
if
fare
it's
miles.
But if it's attached to the, if you're selecting the credit card to use, you're still getting that the credit for it.
Sure.
You're not bypassing that because you have to decide, you know, what you, you know, what you're going to use.
Makes good.
For the money.
Makes sense. Sue and LaCroix.
You may not have the money in your bank account, but you may have the credit.
Yeah. Sue and LaCroix, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hi, guys.
Oh, nuts. Sue.
Maybe she'll come back and rain soon.
She was talking about the safety of making payments over the phone. That was her general question. I don't know any more of the specifics. Sue, we can't hear ya.
You know, that's another thing that has really tweaked my brain cells in terms of making purchases over the phone. It's a lot safer doing it online, putting your card in, putting your security code and all that other information in a secure site, so where it says HTTPS, than it is giving it to somebody over the phone.
Yeah.
Because you're giving it to a person that could hand it off. And I know that I've traveled out of this country and I came back and I know I handed off my card a couple of times in restaurants. So all of a sudden I get home and there's a purchase on my card for like some kind of makeup deal.
Yeah.
I don't buy makeup. Sorry, not me. So my point is,
you don't have to go out of the country, by the way, for that. That happened to me when I was in Florida at a rest, and I'm sure I had to give my card up. And I got a call from the credit card company saying, "Hey, did you really order some jewelry and have it sent to Arizona?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Okay, we'll knock that off your card."
Yeah. So my point is, physically handing somebody a card or talking to them over the phone and giving your information is less secure than actually going to a secure website and putting that information in, or putting it into an account and then using it in a tokenized form to make a payment.
Yeah.
Those are more secure.
Let's go to Jim in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a question. I have a hardwired, let's say, into the wall. It's not Wi-Fi hooked up computer. It's about probably 8, 9 years old with Windows 10. And I just read somewhere where older computers are no longer as secure as, like, Microsoft Windows are not, you know, making it secure. But I still have antivirus and other things on it. But I'm wondering, I want to set up a Social Security account. I'm just wondering how safe that would be.
As long as you're running Windows 10, you're up to date with the latest version of the operating system. They patch security problems, you know, probably every 30 to 60 days. And as long as you're keeping current with antivirus, you're fine.
Shouldn't be
an issue.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. Sue in La Crosse, we're on to you now again. Sue, hi.
Hi. Sorry, I lost you. I live kind of in a hilly area, so yeah. I'm just wondering, I kind of caught a little bit of the gentleman had spoken about the safety of paying, like, bills over the phone using my checking account and versus paying them online.
So when you say using your checking account over the phone, how are you talking about doing that?
Well, I would call into their pay-by-phone system. Uh-huh. And in a lot of cases, like with my electrical utilities, they store my number and they ask me if I want to use that account. So basically I call that number, they ask for my card, my information, some security questions, and then I'm able to make a payment over the phone. I've just been leery of doing it online.
So you, So you're talking about actually talking to a company, so a utility company or someone that you are a customer of.
Yes, or a credit card company.
Yeah. So, you know, making those kind of payments, those are okay. But it's like if you're in a restaurant or, you know, you're at a shop and or you are doing business with a company, but it's over the phone and you're talking to somebody, it's less secure than if you're actually on a website or if you were to use your bank and put in all your different vendors that you work with. So your utility company, your phone company, your cell phone, mobile or, you know, BP, who you buy your gas from, you know, on and on and on, your mortgage payment, rent payment, all that. And I think even rent companies with apartments have systems set up where, you know, in their account, your tenant account,
yeah,
they probably have something set up where you have a payment pulled out possibly. But what I like is in my bank account, I'm in control of everything that I push out. So I don't have any surprises of something that I set up that pulls from it,
yeah,
that I don't know where it's, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I have everything. And the other nice feature when you do online banking is that you have projections. So if you put in your bills on a regular basis, you have this rolling picture of what's coming due, when it's due, when the payment's going out. And it makes it a lot easier to manage your funds because you have so much coming in, so much going out, and you can see the picture of that.
And what I like about it also is you can, the UW Credit Union, for example, at the end of the year you get a pie chart basically that shows here's
how you spent your money,
how I spent my money in the last year, which I think is kind of cool too.
Yeah, and with this probably, boy, we could I'll go on with this because it's a really good question. So I use the mobile app on my phone, so I have a Samsung Galaxy S9 and I have the UW Credit Union, but you could have any bank you
any
want
bank.
And it has an app. And it's just as if I was sitting at my desk. I hardly ever, I stopped going to it now because they figured out how to transfer money between different banks. So now I can transfer money from using my phone to another bank that I need to transfer money to. And as far as making deposits, I use it for making mobile deposits. So I take a picture of the front of the check, the back of the check, and I deposit it. I don't even have to go to the bank to sit in line to deposit a check.
Yeah.
And they're like, how does that work? Well, it actually, I believe it's like $1,500 a day. So if a check is for $2,000, $1,500 is usable. $500 is on hold for typically 2, maybe 3 days.
Yeah.
They tell you maybe a little longer, but you could do that every day.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing.
It's phenomenal. When I started using it, I was like, wow, this is great. I don't have to sit in line anymore. I sign the check. I put my account number and phone number on the back, take the picture, two pictures, upload it, done.
Done. Yeah. There you go.
So, and making payments, like I said, you get all these projections. You get, you know, if you categorize it, how much did I spend for this? How much I spent for that? It's a great tool.
Yeah. Sue, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly. John in Waynesboro, Minnesota, we're on to you now. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just had a suggestion for the credit card and the gas station and the restaurant. If you scratch your security code off of the back of the credit card, they can't use it for over-the-phone purchases.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, and then you just have to remember that number, that three-digit number. Yeah, that's not a bad idea, John.
Don't write it down on the napkin at the restaurant.
Very good idea.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments.
Simple things that we don't think about. That's such a simple thing to do.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea, and it's easy enough. Would be easy enough to do too, and I've used it enough. I can certainly remember that number, and I'm not going to give it over the air for sure. Well, we have some callers. Have you had any problems, Pete, at all with transactions in this digital format, other than having your credit card number stolen?
No, every now and then. Yeah, I've had calls from Visa and, you know, banks questioning certain things.
Which I'm always happy to have.
Yeah. But one time, you know, I called them twice, Visa, and I said, for whichever card it was, I said, I'm going to be traveling in Europe for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And they tried reaching me when I was over there, and I told them my phone wouldn't work and I wouldn't have probably wouldn't have access to email. And it was for when I was trying to pay the hotel that I was staying at.
But that was
like probably 15 years ago. In this day and age, they have fraud divisions, and they try to stay ahead of the problem. And I've gotten calls where they said, hey, we need you to come in and change your card because we deactivated it because we detected that someone was trying to test using it for putting a transaction through in a different state. And we know you're not in that state.
Yeah. Well, on to Connie in Wales next. Hi, Connie.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I heard you talking about checks being, you know, just take a picture and deposit it. And my kids do it all the time, and I think it's great, too. But we had a situation where my daughter had a check from her grandmother, and she was leaving quickly because she was going over mission work, and she didn't write deposit it on the check. She thought she does that with all of them. So she resent the check and then discovered that she had already deposited it, called the bank in New York, and they said, oh, don't worry, we can't do anything now, but the computer will catch it. And then we called my mother's bank, and they said, oh, it's already gone through. So both banks did not catch that this check was, you know, had already been deposited in my daughter's and had been was taken out a second time at my mom's. So I don't even know what to do to prevent that, but except make sure you write deposit on there. But both the computer, both banks did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it can happen.
Yeah. Usually when I make a deposit a check, I write mobile deposit on it and the date. And I think some of the checks that I even see from different people, because I run some hockey team things, I see the checks on the back have mobile deposit, like a mobile deposit, you know, where you can check it off there as well. Yeah, as far as, you know, the banking issue, I've seen it and I've heard where payments have been pulled twice and you can contact the bank and they have you fill out a form and then send it in and say, hey, you need to back this out. So once things are initiated, especially with this, I believe it's Zelle Pay that I used, it happens in a day. It probably happens in probably a couple hours, but they don't want to tell you because in the back room it's getting verified, you know, and then they'll allow it to get posted within the next, you know, 12 hours so it looks like it happened overnight. But, you know, once some of these things get started, it's kind of hard to pull back the reins on them.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
It's... You know, it's not 100% fail-proof, you know, in terms of what we just heard, but it's probably pretty high that it's not going to happen too often.
Thanks, Connie. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Gary and Tomahawk next. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. Glad to hear from you guys. Hey, I run a Windows system, and two questions on that. Acrobat Reader. Mm-hmm. Should that some of the things that are saved on that. Should that be deleted once in a while? And I use TeamViewer to view other computers once in a while with friends or whatever to show them different things. And that's on my task bar, so it's like always on there and in there. Are those two things that I should maybe not run and maybe delete Acrobat Reader, some of the things that's in there sometimes?
Well, when you talk about Acrobat Reader, you're just reading PDF files. That's what it's allowing right. you to do. So, you know, if you're done reading those files and they're not don't have any meaning, hold any value, you know, you can delete those. So that's not really much of a security issue, but the team viewer question is, because if you have it on your taskbar, that means it's enabled. And if you're allowing other people to have access to your computer, they're basically digitally tapping and saying, hey, is your computer there? And it is, because you have it turned on. And then if you happen to be away and it's turned on, they could actually log in and work on your computer. Unless you have a desktop password, user and password control, and for your home computer, you may or may not have that. Some people do, some people don't.
Yeah, there you go.
So you can turn it off. You can go into TeamViewer options and turn it off, so and then reboot your system, and then it won't be there in the taskbar.
Yeah. There you go, Gary.
Just turn it on when you need to.
And thanks very much for calling. Diane in Chippewa Falls, on to you now.
Hi, this is in regards to the gentleman with an older computer and looking to set up his Social Security account on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Many websites, and I apologize if you've talked about this already, many websites allow you to do an extra authorization. And I believe Social Security does that. So when I log in, it sends a text message to my phone, and I then put that code in. So it's an extra layer of security for getting into my Social Security account.
Yeah, and that's a good way.
Sounds like the right way.
Sounds like the right way for sure. Thanks, Diane.
I have
something similar to that, actually.
Yeah, you should, Larry, you should be the expert on this, because I'm almost of age, but I have not.
Oh, yeah. I'm not on Social Security
okay.
either. So.
All right. So you're a little older than me, so I figured, you know, but okay.
No.
We might have to call in some other troops on that one.
Well, I actually have that identical system with something else that I've got online where they text me to my email after I've done the password and everything.
Okay.
And then I text that in and I'm good.
Yeah. We live in a cell phone empowered world. The cell phone really allows us to have that, you know, validation of who we are, because it's your cell phone number.
Yeah.
You know, it is you.
Yeah.
And I try to, and finally got through to my kids, they said, treat it as an appendage, because when they first started getting cell phones, my God, they would lose them left and right. And I'm like, you gotta need to treat it like you're going to lose a finger or an arm.
Yeah.
And couldn't stress enough. And now they're like, Dad, I love my iPhone 5. I'm like, what? What?
You still Why? Got that.
You know, they're like, oh, I'm going to just buy another one because I really, instead of upgrading.
Oh, Diane, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Joe in Ontario, Wisconsin. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have two questions real quick, if that's okay. We were traveling across country and using our debit card for gas purchases, and found that they were blocking $100 each time we filled up for gas. And then when we got to our hotel, the funds weren't available, and I had been since told that rather than pressing the debit option, you should press the credit option so that they don't pull that out. And since it's a debit card, there are no charges, and they'll still authorize it. I wanted to know the any disadvantage to doing that, and if that's a proper thing to do. Then my other question was, what happens if I lose my cell phone? I've got banking, online banking on there, and then other like the Apple Pay and that kind of thing, if there's any way that they can, you know, get the information. I don't have the fingerprint option on my phone in order to lock it. So I was just kind of curious about those two questions.
But you do have a security code to lock your phone, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's the important thing. Also, making sure that the different companies offer backup services, you know, to back up the data on your phone. So, you know, make sure it's backed up. So, you know, losing contacts, you know, all that information, you can have it backed up securely. If you, in the event that you lose your phone, there is, your phone actually transmits an electronic serial number that identifies your phone along with your cell. I think it's like an IEMI number or something like that. It's one of some kind of acronym like that. But if you actually open up your phone, you can look and you'll find it in there. So they can shut down, you know, the services for your phone. I believe some of the newer phones can be remotely wiped as well. So that's another feature of some of the new phones. Doesn't work for all of them. As far as the credit card purchase with the gas, that's a great
that's happened to other people.
Because the debit card, they put a hold on your account when you're making that purchase for gas. So if you're using a debit, they're going to hold that $100, and it doesn't usually go through until the next day. So that is true. If you use it as a credit, then it's just for the actual the credit amount or the purchase amount as a credit. The other thing is if you're traveling across countries, to make sure that you call your bank or let you know, put in your travel plans in your online bank account or call them. Or same thing with the credit cards that you plan to use, because they could shut you down, you know, thinking that your card found its way to somebody else's hands and was making their way across the country and not you. So that's a good habit to get into, is to alert your financial institutions and your credit card companies, you know, that you have travel plans.
Yeah, that's come up before. Joe, your story is not unusual.
And some require you to call them, and some allow you to, you know, put it online.
Yeah.
I've had both.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Join in with your questions. We're talking computer and software issues today. We've focused a bit on digital payment and security with him. We can take other questions as well at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer and software with our guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today. Our lines are filled up here. We'll go to John in Mount Horeb next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about the best format to use to digitally scan old black and white photos. I've gotten into family genealogy, and my scanner allows me to scan in either JPEG or TIFF format. Now, I've heard from other sources that the TIFF format is best for long-term storage and, you know, for archival things that you want to keep forever. I just like your comment on that. And then also, when I have saved things as a TIFF and I email them to another family member, they tell me that they can't open them. So perhaps you have suggestions on that as well.
Yeah, so, you know, the two formats that you talk about, there are other formats. There's PNG, which is another digital format, and BMP, bitmap, and GIF file, GIF. And there are others out there, but those are the most popular ones that you see. The ones that I mentioned, other than TIFF, a person that you would email could see those. So typically your email environments of Google Gmail or Apple Mail or, you know, whatever you're using for email, those environments let you see those picture files. If you send them a TIFF file, typically they're not going to have an application that's going to let them look at that. So that's it's a higher end file. It's not a commonplace file. It's used a lot in the digital creative world. People with Photoshop and Illustrator, and creating fonts. So it's almost like a root based file, and it probably would be better for digital archiving. But in terms of being able to, but the file is huge. It's so much bigger, you know, a TIFF file compared to the same, you know, for what you visually see. So let's say the footprint is a 20-inch screen and you're seeing 90% of, you know, that picture on the screen. And that JPEG file is, let's say, 1 megabyte. The TIFF file would be, you know, be so ginormous, you know, to load it.
In comparison.
Being able to appreciate those files, you're probably going to want to have them in both formats. And then moving on in time, making sure you have a TIFF reader, because more than likely moving on in time, you're going to be able to read all those other formats, you know, with software that's commonplace versus trying to read a TIFF file at a later date.
Oh.
So, and also you have to allow for more space for storage, depending upon how much you're archiving.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps.
John, does that help?
Much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Good
appreciate
luck.
It. Let's go to John in Mount Horeb. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter and Larry. Hi. Just a question. I've got a pop-up that keeps showing up on my computer. It's, I don't know if I should say the site or not, but it's getthelocalnews.co, and it says it always says Google Chrome next to it. And I just can't get the thing to stop popping up. I blocked it under my options in my browser, and I've put on different software and run it just to see if it's malware, and I can't seem to block it. Is there a program out there you'd recommend where you can go after something like that?
So which browser? Which browser is it coming up in?
It's showing up in Google Chrome.
In Chrome, okay.
Yeah.
So, and you're using Windows?
I am using Windows 10.
Okay. So, and you've tried to shut off pop-ups and it still shows up?
Yeah, specifically named that pop-up and it still pops up. And, I mean, it's, you know, it always pops up with pictures of people's colons or scantily clad women and things like that. And I share my screen with coworkers and I'm like, I really don't want them thinking this is what I'm looking at, which...
So have you looked into what's enabled in your in the Chrome? I believe it's like options, and there's a place to enable or disable, you know, some of these side things that hook into your, like, I don't know what, you know, I don't remember where all these, you know, things to turn on and off are. Another thing to look for is in the Windows control panel is to look and see if there might be an application that's installed that you don't recognize that might actually be, you know, tied into this. So
okay.
That's
my wife has a similar computer, Google operating or Google Chrome browser, and same operating system, and she doesn't get it.
So you might check when you're looking at settings or you're going into...
Yeah, you could also Google pop-up blocker for Chrome and, you know, see what options are out there, because there might be a setting that you're missing to, you know, to shut it down.
Yeah.
I know I have that stuff happen even on my smartphones, and that can get very frustrating. And you have to keep prying under the hood, you know, to figure out where they got their little hooks in. Sometimes it's... you know, an application or something that you might have installed that has some remnants that need to be removed. You know, if you can also do a search describing the pop-up, you might find out, you know, who the owner is, and there might be a removal tool out there, because sometimes these things bug people enough that someone, some programmer, creates something to remove it.
Yeah. Another thing to think about, or, yep, and to look into, John. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Beth in Merrill, Wisconsin. We'll go to you next. Hi, Beth.
Hi. A couple questions. I just got a new laptop. I just entered my information into it. I was going to check into purchasing Microsoft Word because I'm going to be doing resumes on it. And then someone told me I didn't have to do that. I could just use Google Docs. I don't know what you recommend for that. The other thing is there any, like, things off the top of your head that you can think of that I should do to keep this laptop safe and malware-free?
Do you have any antivirus on it?
I do not know that, actually. Okay. My daughter just picked it up for me, and I don't really know much about it yet.
Okay. Yeah, you should definitely get some antivirus software on it. There's AVG and Avast. I believe those are the same company now. I've used those. They work well. Malwarebytes, I wanted to mention for the previous caller, could also use something like Malwarebytes. Download that, the free version, to do a scan of your system and, you know, look for the pop-up issues. Malwarebytes is also a good solution, you know, to prevent against malware. They're almost similar, but it seems like there's always something it does a little extra that the antivirus doesn't do. So sometimes using both of them in combination is a good solution. I would also make sure, you know, in terms of, are you using it at home on a Wi-Fi environment? Do you have,
mm-hmm,
and yes, you have that set up and you have it, you know, secure in terms of password protected and so forth for,
mm-hmm,
access?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Make sure you have stuff for backups. Do you have do you use it for pictures at all or videos?
It will
or,
be, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you might want to invest in an external hard drive for doing backups. As far as the Microsoft Word and Google Docs, I've shared that for a long time because unless you're doing something really special that requires a lot of versatility, Google Docs will work well for a lot of people. And
Okay. You
have, if you have a Gmail account, you have access to Google Docs, working with pictures. You have a drive up in the cloud where you can store things. You can also share things with other people, giving them a secure link that only they have to have access to, you know, pictures in the cloud or other files. So there's a lot of nice things for having a Google account.
All right.
Well, that's helpful.
All right, Beth.
And it's all pretty much free.
Yeah.
There are some things you can pay for that give you more features, but, you know, you can weigh those when you go to the different sites. So, you know, Avast and Google and Malwarebytes.
The particular ones that you mentioned, the antivirus ones, they don't work against each other, do they, or do they?
No.
No, they do not. Some of the
AVG has been around a long time. Avast has been around a long time, and I believe Avast bought AVG. Those two, you don't need both of those. Malwarebytes is a different company, and I've run it on numerous systems together, and they work, they coexist just fine.
Sometimes I think I can remember in the past. Norton.
Yeah, it's not so much in now as it was in the past where they were fighting each other. And the other thing is sometimes when you go to install software, you have to shut off your antivirus.
Sure.
I've had that happen many, many times.
Forget and then.
Well, it'll fight you.
Yeah.
Because it thinks you're installing something that's bad for your computer until you shut it off, and it says, oh, I see that you've given it permission to use your computer, and then you turn it back on.
Yeah. Beth, does that help out?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right.
Good
Thank
luck.
You very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today is Peter Green. Pete is a computer consultant with Infostar.com. He talks with us regularly about how to help with your personal computer problems. Join in if you have a question or comment. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Susie emailed to ask what you can do to free up space on your phone when the iCloud is full and you're too cheap to pay every month for more. What is taking up all the space? Pictures? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, typically pictures. Text messages, not so much. Email, not unless you get a lot of it. Videos and files that you inadvertently downloaded, didn't realize. So, you know, some of the utilities that are out there, and you can do searches for them, will allow you to look at the files that you have on your phone and make them easier to delete, or if you want to back them up to another device before you delete them.
Yeah, sometimes I look when I'm cutting out pictures, I might have five pictures of the same picture, essentially, and you start getting rid of all of those, and suddenly you have more space.
Yeah, I'm guilty. I have over 5,000 pictures on my phone.
Peter Green of Infostar.com. He'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news and weather, then we'll be back with Peter. So you stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer and software and all kinds of issues you may or may not have with our guest, Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Comes by every couple of months to talk about personal computer problems. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Linda in Middleton, we'll get to you in just a second, but Pete, we always, at this time of the show, do a top 10 list. What have you got for us?
I'll try to go through these as quickly as possible. If you go to Infostar.com and on the top left, either the top 10 archives and scroll to today's date or the current top 10. First one is weather.gov. And Larry, I don't know if you've been to that site recently, but oh my God, the amount of data and information about weather, it's unbelievable, including the historic flooding that we had.
Yeah.
The detailed maps and so forth. And then I just want to remind people, when I travel, the site holiday-weather.com, if you're picking a vacation spot or where you're traveling, you want to know everything about weather history on a particular place, that's the place to go. Vox.com is number two, and they claim to explain the news. And for example, I put it up there. Did you know that there is lab-grown meat?
Yes.
I did not know that. Anyhow, they asked the question, would you eat a burger grown from animal cells rather than a whole cow? So stuff like that is explained at that site. Number three is CRISPRTX.com, and it has to do with
CRISPR, I'll bet.
CRISPR, yep. Which is a family of DNA sequences found within the genomes of prokaryotic organisms, such as bacteria. And anyhow, it's a very interesting site to learn more about genetics. Number four, buzzfile.com. They claim to have the most advanced, freely available company information out there today. So if you want to know information about companies, buzzfile.com, and they also have educational information as well, and educational institutions. Number five, Trustpilot is a review platform open to everybody. So if you want to share your experiences about products and services to help people make better choices, that's a site to check out. Number six, FTC complaintassistant.gov. I know we've talked about this before. It's really a reminder that there's help out there if you have problems with known uses of fraud or abuse and you want help with the Federal Trade Commission. Number seven, I mentioned this. I tried this for the first time, zellipay.com. It works. It's great. It saves me having to make, you know, a trip and transferring money, and within 24 hours, it's done. Number 8, vaccinemakers.org, committed to the public education about vaccine science, which has been in the news quite a bit with the measles scares that we keep getting. So I hope people educate themselves more and more about what it is about, you know, taking a vaccine and being vaccinated against certain diseases. Number 9, this is coming up tomorrow. Right, Larry?
Yeah.
You know about this, right?
Day of the Badger?
Yeah. Dayofthebadger.org, a day for Badger Nation to unite in celebration of the UW, and I put that link up there. And number 10, Apple.com, with all their announcements made on March 25th, and I've got a summary of all that. It's almost a couple of web pages worth of links and information about Apple and all the other things that are going on out there related to it.
So that's all at Infostar.com.
Yep.
All right. Now we'll go to Linda in Middleton. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a Brothers HP color laser jet printer, and it defaults to color, and I just feel like it's a waste, you know, to have it default to color, and I want it to default to black and white. Is that possible?
Yeah, you should be able to go into printer properties. So are you using a Windows system?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know where the setup is to go to in the gear, click on the gear, and then click on devices? You'll find the printer.
Right, yep.
Yeah, and you should be able to click on the properties and change it within that.
Okay, because I know when I do any document, I can go to printer properties within the document and change it, but I don't want to have to do that every single time, so I wanted to know if I could get it the default sent to or set to black and white.
Yeah, I would think you would be able to.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem.
Did it come with its own utility?
I don't know. How would I find out?
If it was, sometimes when you get the printer, it comes either comes with a disk or it might have pointed you to a website to download some software for it.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, my husband installed it.
Because an HP color laser printer?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's super expensive, but it's probably a little bit more expensive than your typical printer. And
it's a few years old, and I believe we got it Home Depot. But
The other thing is, you might want to. You could Google the question.
That's a great idea.
With the model of the printer, to change to default to black printing, and see what comes up.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Linda. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Tony in Amory next. Hi, Tony.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was wondering how hard it would be to change the governor setting on a CPU. I want to go from saving battery to making the CPU go really fast.
How difficult is it? Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. One would be if you have information on your system board, there's the BIOS that came with it, and it can provide you with details about how to get into the CMOS and changing the settings for the clocking of your chip. You can make some changes in the operating system, but for with regards to like saving the battery, but not really like speeding up the processor or turbocharging the chip. That relies on the BIOS settings that are provided by the manufacturer.
So there's no way around that.
That it's really best done in that setup. So you need to have the model of your system and, the BIOS. And that information comes up when you turn it on. It's like the first black and white screen that you see before you start seeing your colorful desktop. So that's where you have to find that information. And then you can go online and see what options you have for turbocharging or overclocking, the chip you're using. If you're doing it in a desktop, see, it's a typical question for a gaming system. If you do it in a desktop system, they normally recommend having extra fans for cooling the CPU because your system will have a tendency to overheat. So, and also some of the faster chips, like the it's not so new anymore, but the Ryzen by AMD, if you didn't have your case set up properly with the proper cooling and, you know, air ventilation, you could have overheating problems.
Yeah, if you've got something sitting on top of them.
So sometimes the larger cases are larger for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have options of adding extra fans and things like that, and water cooled and bigger fins. And they even do that on video cards.
Wow.
Not water. I don't think water cooled, but bigger fins and fans on the cards.
Tony, does that help out?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
It can give you a little bit extra boost in speed, but it also can cause other issues.
Your computer to burn up.
Yeah. So you have to be prepared.
All right. There you go. Bob and Claybanks, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
Peter, I was wondering what your opinion is of the Windows Defender that Microsoft has compared to, like, the AVG or the Avast.
It's a good thing to have, but I wouldn't rely solely on it.
Okay.
I use it, but it's not the only thing, because it just isn't. It shouldn't be the only thing that you're using.
All right. There you go, Bob. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. It does a pretty good job.
It does. It, you know, for a while when it came out, it was, I tried it and then I had issues with it and turned it off. Now it's gotten a lot better. They have it's almost like every month where they send out this security news and tell you about patches and builds and all this stuff. And then they include, really bad virus stuff that they have a tool for, and then they tell you about, you know, their Defender. And they've done a lot better in recent years in keeping it up to date. But they came out with it, and then they didn't do anything with it. And it was very frustrating because it was like, why are these things happening? So that's why I feel cautious about relying only on that.
1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions. Mary in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just heard the tail end of that last conversation. I had the question about Microsoft Essentials. I hope you weren't talking about that.
No, go on.
Oh, okay. Is that the same as the AVG and the malware bytes?
They use that. I haven't heard that used in such a long time.
I have Microsoft 10.
Yeah.
Office 10.
I haven't heard that term
used.
I don't
remember either.
It used to be like their Defender, and it used to be their free email software and some other things. So there might be some components of Microsoft Essentials that are useful.
Maybe somebody else has an answer for us.
I'm pretty sure it was a name that they gave to a group of programs that they, you know, put out there for free for you to use, and they called them Microsoft Essentials. Instead of using Outlook, you had Microsoft, I think it was like Live Mail, which was, you know, after Outlook Express, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's a group of offerings from Microsoft. So it's really a matter of, you know, what do you need or, you know, want to use from that, you know, that offering.
You don't have to use all of it.
No, you can pick and choose what you want.
So you need to go back through that and just see.
Yeah, so like I use Outlook, but if I wasn't using Outlook, I would be using Microsoft's email solution from their Essentials.
All right. Does that help, Mary?
About Excel? Yeah, can you answer a question about Excel too?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, my computer has Excel and the other computer doesn't. For it to read it, should I save it as it's what extension or?
Well, in order to read the Excel file, if you save it and transfer it to another computer, or if you have a valid link, you know, a network link where you're saving it to another computer, if you don't have Excel on that system, you won't be able to read it. But you could use, you know, Google Docs would allow you to open up the spreadsheet so you could view it if you wanted.
Just couldn't do anything with it.
You might be able to. It depends on how elaborate the spreadsheet is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mary, does that help?
Yes, it does. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, thanks a lot for calling.
You need to own the software. You need to have the software on every computer that you want to look at or do anything with a file. So if it's a picture file, if you don't have a browser to open up on a computer to look at a picture file, you'd need some software to allow you to, you know, like Paint or something to look at it. So same thing with a spreadsheet. You have to have that program that it was originated in order to do something with. But there are compatible programs like Google Docs, which would allow you to work with Word files or spreadsheets to do what you need to.
All right. Mary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Kathy in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. I just have a question. I would like to know if your guest knows of a device that I can plug into the back of my Apple into the USB port that comes back around and has access to like three or four other USB ports, so I don't have to keep reaching around the back of my computer all the time.
You know, that's a good question because I have that at work, and I've tried a couple of them, and I'm thinking that I have a device at home which is actually a special power USB multi-port, and I think that's what's needed. You're talking about hooking it up to your Apple, right?
Yeah, plugging it in via USB,
yeah,
and then letting it come around the front of my computer so I can plug the rest of my stuff in,
yeah,
like, say, my Garmin when I want to update it. And I have an external disk drive.
Yeah, because I have the same problem, and I've tried, to spread out with, you know, a multi-port USB. And I've had problems with other USB devices hooking up to it. I think it's because the power, it's not providing enough power to them.
So what do you have at home that does the job?
I'm not, yeah. it's plugged in.
Okay.
So it powers the USB ports, and it's a charger. So it wouldn't work as a solution for that, but it works good enough to power Apple devices, which they say shouldn't work for. Apple's a little quirky with USB stuff, so you might have to research it online. I kind of gave up on looking for a solution after I tried two of them. I'm like, oh, I guess it must happen for all of them. But I'm sure there's probably something out there. You might want to just do a little bit more research and see what comes up. I gave up on that. Unfortunately, I gave up on it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
There you go, Kathy. Maybe somebody else has got an idea. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, we're talking about Microsoft and this program tomorrow. IBM was the sort of the originator of the personal computer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a story about Bill Gates and another guy. There were two guys that IBM was looking at to sort of...
For the operating system, for the PC.
And they wanted the other guy... there's quite a story about he decided he wanted to fly his plane that day that they were going to meet. And so he sent his wife, who was an attorney, to deal with him. And they didn't like her, so they went back to Bill Gates.
Wow.
And so that was probably, the author of the book says, that may have been the worst mistake in the history of business. because it was a billions of dollars mistake. Yeah. It, well, we'll be talking some more about that tomorrow. It's pretty interesting. Deborah and Brown Deer, your turn. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, you guys. I bought a new phone through my carrier, U.S. Cellular, and I have my old phone. They had just mailed that to me in December. It's a Moto 6, and I have like 10,400 some photos on it.
Oh, she's
and
got
when
more
I got
than me.
The new one. What?
You have more pictures than me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's more of a camera than it is a phone. So when I bought the new LG 6, which I like better, by the way, but the guy didn't transfer my photos, and they're still on my old phone, and I'm wondering, can I do it myself? And if I lose them, I'll just want to die.
You can transfer the pictures yourself. You really want to hook it up to a, you know, some kind of computer, whether it's a PC or Apple, and transfer those pictures so you have a backup of them. And then you may want to go through and edit and figure out which ones you really want to keep. And then you can transfer them back onto your new phone. And there's a lot of good software out there to do that.
Which one, is there some software you like better than others?
You know, there's, I think, Syncios is one Syncios, that I use.
Yeah.
Also, when you plug in your phone, it will recognize where your pictures are located. So you might be able to just do it with the operating system itself. You know, these other programs give you a lot more features, but the operating system itself will allow you, you know, access to where your photos are.
Okay.
So you should be able to just plug your phone in, you know, USB,
yeah,
and just, you know, it'll ask you, what do you want to do, and just import your pictures, you know where they're going, and take the time to go through and see what you really want to save. Because, I mean, I showed Larry some pictures in the break, and some of them can be deleted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have over 5,000 pictures on my phone, but how many of them are really, you know,
maybe
useful?
Maybe 1,000 of them could
no,
go.
No, probably 4,500, Larry. Come on.
Deborah, thanks. Good luck. Ron in La Crosse, have you got a quick comment on USB hub?
Yeah, I bought a USB hub many years ago. Hardly used it, but I bought a Mac Mini, and of course I got a lot of things plugged into the USB jacks. But I ran out of jacks, so I used the USB plug. I had a long USB cord with standard plugs on both ends, and I connected the USB plug onto the back of my Mac with that cord, and in most applications there's four USB jacks, output jacks on the hub, and most of those hardware is powered by that without putting in the external power AC-DC adapter, which also
correct
came with.
Yep.
And
yep.
I did power my super disk drive, that Apple hardware DVD drive, but I had to use the external power drive. But I found,
oh, we are out of time, Ron. I'm sorry. I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for calling. Peter, thank you. You're back June 10th. We'll do this all over again.
Yes, we will.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back on June 10th. Tomorrow, as I said, we'll talk about the reinvention and invention of IBM. It's a fascinating book. In the meantime, hey, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.